Sam Harper, my dear friend, welcome to the Live Your Truth Now podcast. How are you?
I'm so good. Thank you for having me.
We've been hanging out the last like 4 days. We've been at like the same events and getting to connect and hang out. And you and Emily have been bonding too, which is, it's been amazing.
It's been so much fun. I don't get to see even some of my closest friends this frequently. So what a treat.
Yeah, I know. It's been so great, especially for me, you know, within the last year, community has been like a really big emphasis and focus on all of this. And so, you know, to be able to cultivate these deep relationships and to be able to have these relationships pop up in my, you know, it kind of in my realm, right? In my physical sphere, and to be able to have like amazing people like yourself and part of the dinner series that we're also in for the next year. And it's been really great. And so I'm so glad we get to have these moments with each other too.
Me too. They're like deeply intentional too. I don't feel like it's surface level. Like we get to go deep each time, which is part of what I'm doing with community too, is just going deeper, not just staying on the surface. So that's been really lovely.
Yeah. And speaking of community, I think this is just a great entry point to dive right into just our conversation today around, you know, community and energy. And you're a incredibly well-renowned sound healer. You have an amazing talent with sound and frequency. And I know you just recently gave a talk on the science of sound and frequency. And so one of the things that I would love to really dive in before kind of that science and sound aspect is community. I think, and I was mentioning this to you last night at our friend's wedding, where I was starting to see that I think where a lot of us are going is finding community and tribe. Mm-hmm. It's no longer that macro level anymore. I think for a lot of us, it's we're searching for groups. We're searching for people. We're searching for like-minded people and trying to find folks that we can do life with, and we can do all the things that we've ever wanted in a very closely tight-knit circle. In terms of your aspect of community building, what's the main focus or focal point for you when it comes to building your community? And why do you think people, in your opinion, are looking for community so much today?
Well, for me, community building started probably 6 years ago on a very intentional level when I started doing community events for sound healing, pop-ups kind of all around the city. And it was really interesting how that started. Like I was doing a pop-up downtown and then another one in Scottsdale and then somewhere in between and at some really cool venues. And I would find that people were just following me anywhere. And I was like, oh, this is great. I have a community that's not in just one location. It just kind of forms around me, which is really cool. And that really fostered building into the community that I have now at The Portal, which is my wellness studio in Scottsdale. And now it's from taking this community that was kind of dispersed across the valley now into one local central point for people to meet up at. And what's been really beautiful about The Portal in particular is that the common thread, what people are saying the most, is that it feels like home. And so it's a place for them to come to heal, to connect, to laugh, to play, to surrender, to cry, whatever it looks like. And I really think that that is the crux of community, is whether it be a physical place or if it's kind of moving about, is where can you go where you can be all facets of yourself? Because that's what we want. That as humans, that's what we want. We want to be seen and understood for all of the parts of who we are. And so I think really that's like the most important part of community, is can I show up and feel safe to be my full self?
And that authenticity is so beautiful too, because I think it is the safety that we are all craving, right? That we, I think more now people are so afraid of being judged or ridiculed, especially on the internet where everybody has a megaphone and everybody has an opinion and people can just pop in and out of your channel, not have any context to what you're saying.
Right.
And still have this like criticism of you or this judgment of you. And it's almost kind of like a hit and run, right? I can drive by, say something super nasty to you, and then just walk away and you would never know who I am.
Yep.
In terms of safety, are you finding that men are wanting the safety just as much as women? Are you finding that women are craving the safety more than men? Is it gender specific or is it the same all across the board?
I think that it's the same across the board. I think we're all wanting that safety. I think that the pace in which the masculines and the feminines are finding our way into it are evolving differently. So, and I don't think I would be the only one saying this, but the divine feminine has been going through this huge healing journey for, I would say, probably the last 4 years, like very collective, very intentional, kind of coming back into womanhood, allowing ourselves to be soft. Like there was probably a year ago, you know, like the soft girl era where, you know, the hyper independence was no longer what we were thriving for. We didn't want to be like the boss babe anymore. Like that sort of going away where we can be into the soft. And so we've been on this healing journey for so long. And now I think the men are starting their healing journey of healing that brother wound and that like ultra hyper masculine mode of like what it means to be a provider and be manly and like all this stuff. And so I think the men are like really on their journey too. But I think separately, the communities and the safety is equally as important. And I think equally like thriving towards that.
Mm-hmm. With women, you were mentioning that the boss babe era is kind of dying out or it's dead, you know, and I know for any women entrepreneurs out there that are hearing this have been fully embodying that movement for such a long time. It's this female independence. It's this, the ability to like stand on your own 2 feet. Mm-hmm. I can run a company just as well, if not better than a man who's running a company. And what I'm hearing you say is this evolution of the stepping back and laying back into the feminine energy. Do you find that that was a wounding for people in the feminine or we could say it that way. Was that a wounding for them? Like originally that was an emphasis. Yeah. Tell me more about that.
Yes, absolutely. I think, you know, we had to fight for having a seat at the table. We had to fight so hard for that. And then once we got it, because that fight required so much of the feminine really being in the masculine, now we've been at the table for a minute. And so now that we're at the table, we're like, okay, hold on. The fight is not our innate being. So I'm here. How can I be here in my innate being of the feminine to create, to provide in a different kind of way that men provide? We provide vision. We provide leadership of like, go get that thing, right? We provide softness. And so I think that's where it's moving. Not that we're not still boss babying, because we absolutely are, but it's in more of a receptive and creative energy and delegating. Like we're not doing it all by ourselves anymore, but we had to do that to get here. And so now I think it's like a reverse engineering of like, okay, we got here. Now, how do we even it out to be in our natural form?
What about men and their feminine energy? You were talking about the healing on that aspect and the brother, you know, the brother energy and the brother. When you talk to me about what you're observing on the male side of things with that.
Yeah. So I think for the men, that was almost like reverse, right? Like the men weren't allowed to be soft at all. And they weren't allowed to have emotions. And you just had to tough it through. And now I think that the men are really starting to realize like, oh, I can be in touch with that side of me. And that means I can provide from a place of safety within, not like I'm going to die. It's so primal for men. I think it's just so incredibly primal and not understanding of, oh, I can feel and I can still be strong. And so that's where I think the crossover is starting to form for men of like, no, I can feel into this. That doesn't mean I'm going to go all the way into the feminine energy, because if, you know, for men and women, if we go too far in either direction, it's not going to work. It's not how the polarity is.
Yeah.
So, but I think the men are really starting to get in touch with like opening up to one another even, and sharing some of the fears and their concerns of what it means to be a man and what does it mean to be a leading man right now? Because that I think is really changing too.
Yeah. And then leadership is, you know, it's all encompassing across the board for everybody. I think everybody has a desire to lead in the most authentic way. Mm-hmm. And I think through the lens of healing, which to me is such a great focal point of this part of the conversation and just in your work. Mm-hmm. I think before you can be a leader, you have to be able to do the inner work and the healing within yourself before you can step in front of a group of people, build community, build tribe, and lean that way. Your work as a sound healer, which I've experienced a couple times, has been some of the most beautiful healing work that I've ever been a part of. Yeah. And I know Emily and I have enjoyed it extensively. But the fascinating thing about the healing part is the space holding necessary for healing. When it comes to somebody who's wanting to embark on that healing journey, what does the process look like for them to get started in doing that deep work or that inner work? And in your experience with your programs and your offerings that you have, how do you guide somebody through the initial phases of that healing that's ready, that they're ready to embark on with you?
Mm-hmm. I think that the people who are ready to lean in don't necessarily know what it is that they need. They just know they need something. And so me as a guide, I help create space to lean in to the unknown, which is really scary. Like, we just like to know what's going on at all times, right? We are in a very like controlled environment of wanting to have all the answers. And so for me, it's really providing a place to be messy and to come undone and to lose all of these identities that we've put on ourselves to mask and protect. And it's like, okay, well, let's take this off layer by layer. Let's get to who you really are. And then from there, we can start doing the work. We really can't do any of the work until we're completely uncovered. And so it's, there's like some prep work before the actual journey. In the same way, like you would go on a camping trip, right? Like, you're not just going to go out there with nothing. Like, you set up all of the things ahead of time. You make sure that you have your basic needs. And so that when you get out on the trail, you're pretty much provided for. You have all of the safety measures and, you know, the bear spray and all that stuff. So when dangers do come, so this is like your coping skills. So like, you're putting on your backpack of the journey, the spiritual journey. It's like, what are the coping skills that you're packing with you? Maybe some of those need to go because they're too heavy or they don't work for you anymore. But there is some preparation work in going into like further depth of the journey. But I think that truly it comes from allowing somebody to feel like they don't have it figured out and not feel dumb or stupid or behind because they don't have those answers.
Man, that brings up a lot for me too, because I think that's where the vulnerability piece of like questioning, you know, our own path and our own truth comes up and being judged for it if we were to share how we authentically feel. Mm-hmm. When someone comes to you, and we've talked about intuition, we've talked about, you know, channeling and guidance and receiving like, you know, source of truth, whatever that may be to you. You had mentioned to me that you help people really identify and tap in what that inner voice is saying to them. What is it that is speaking to them? Mm-hmm. What is their source of truth? Some people might hear this and go, well, wait a minute, how do I have multiple voices I go off in my head. One voice might be this voice of God, and then the other voice might be the voice of fear. If you've ever seen that movie Inside Out, it's like,
yes.
It's a great movie. Yeah, it's the same thing, right? Like, so how does somebody identify the difference between intuition or source or universe speaking to them and fear, greed, mm-hmm. sorrow, sadness, and joy?
Mm-hmm. That's such a great question. And I actually teach this method in my Rise Spiritual Mentorship program. And it's simple, but it takes a lot of practice. So to discern and decipher what you're hearing, what you're listening to. So there's layers to the voices, layers to the messages, layers to the inner working of our mind. So first there is the more acute, like what's happening right now? What fear is coming up right now? What emotion is coming up right now? And so we can allow that to filter through, almost like going through your liver, right? Like allow those thoughts to filter through, get them out so that the real messages can then come. And the difference between intuition versus the self is typically the self is going to be very emotionally activated. And that doesn't have to be like negative emotions or negative feelings. It can be really exciting too. So you're going to be activated in either direction, either really, really high and elated and joy, or you're going to feel pretty low and dark and maybe depressed or anxious or all of the shame, right? So yeah. We're getting emotions in both directions. That's the self. That's the internal self. Intuition and source truth is neutral. It's completely neutral. You're not going to be emotionally activated at all. It's going to feel flatline in a good way. And even, I'll give you an example. Like I knew I got some information come in from source and I was like, I wouldn't want that outcome. But I guess if that's what we're doing, that's what we're doing. But I wasn't like, oh my God, I don't want that thing to happen to me. I wasn't activated. I was just like, okay. It was neutral. Even if it wasn't the outcome I wanted. And sometimes I'll get information come in and it's very positive of like, I'm going to meet a particular person or an opportunity is coming or a monetary thing is coming in. And even when I get that from source, it's neutral. Like, oh, wow, that's nice that that's coming.
Yeah.
But I'm not like, right. Oh, holding my breath for whenever it's coming in. Like, it's just neutral. And so that's the big difference between the self talking and source guidance.
With intuition, what does it sound like?
It's different for everybody. So I often tell people to ask these four questions when you're really trying to get information from source. I always ask whenever I go into meditation, source, God, my guides, my angels, what do you want me to know? What do you want me to see? What do you want me to hear? What do you want me to feel? And in these four questions, it really opens up various different ways for guidance to come in. So sometimes you're not going to hear it. Or it will be so quiet that you can't hear the whisper, but maybe you'll feel it first, or maybe you'll see something, or maybe you'll just know. And so I like to offer up asking of like, speak to me in a lot of ways so that I don't miss what you're trying to tell me.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The seeing and the hearing is so good. When it comes to just finding clarity of what that voice and like what that truth is for us, because I think it puts a physical sensation to it, like looking for signs. It puts like that physical sensation. I could see it in my external. Right. On the healing journey though, it could really be difficult for a lot of us on the healing path to ask for signs because, you know, when you're in the healing phase, you are in a state of vulnerability. Mm-hmm. You're in a state of fragility. And almost every single sign that you hope comes to you could be a sign. And so you try to like force it to potentially have that be the answer. Oh, that's the answer.
Yeah.
Oh, that looks like the answer that I was asking for. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how does one find the stability to trust the process that the healing journey is happening for them, not to them?
Mm. Gosh, that's a whole mind rewiring altogether. That's some of the pre-work. That's some of the stuff you put in your backpack before you go on the journey, right? Of like, okay, how can I start to surrender to this process, even though I don't know exactly where the path is taking me? And so sometimes you have to just look at evidence of how it's unfolded for you in a positive way in the past. I am fairly certain that you and I could both look back at some pretty awful times in life and then see now, oh gosh, that had to happen. That thing had to happen for me to get here now. I had to go through that difficult trial for me to have the resilience to be able to do what I'm doing now. And so sometimes it is all evidence-based from your historic experiences to then instill that trust that, okay, it's going to work for me. In the moment, it might not feel that way, but it's never failed me before.
Speaking of healing, sound is your expertise, love. It's a passion for you. I remember some of the conversations early on when we were starting our friendship. You had told me that sound, there was something about sound that just pulled you in. You immediately gravitated towards this. Mm-hmm. And all the work that you've done with people on their healing journey around sound has been captivating. As I mentioned before, like I have felt moments of emotional vulnerability for no reason. Even on Friday when you did it for our friend Nico's podcast, I watched you execute this amazing facilitation of sound. And I started crying in it. Like I couldn't figure out why. I was like, why am I? I wasn't sad. I just felt tears come out. And maybe that was a part of me experiencing healing at this, in this aspect. For people who are seeking some sort of modality to increase their healing or to expedite their healing. And, you know, we could go into modalities such as psychedelic journeys. We can go into combo. We can go into talk therapy or psychotherapy.
Yeah.
Why does someone or why should someone see sound as a modality to expedite and facilitate the healing that they very much need?
So beautiful. Sound healing is the ultimate surrender, and it will give you the capacity to receive in a way no other modality does. You have to be open to be able to receive the sound, right? And if you're not open, the sound is going to literally penetrate through you to open you up no matter what. And so sound is going to give you exactly what you need, whether you want it or not. I always say you can't bullshit the bowls. You can't lie to frequency, because what you hear is what you are. And so if you are hearing something that's agitating and disruptive, guess what? You're agitated and you're disrupted. In the next moment, you might feel like you hear angels. Well, there's a part of you that is angelic. And so sound healing, it literally vibrates into every single cell and starts to break up some of this stored trauma and endorphins that we didn't process through a trauma or a negative experience. And so when that flow of energy comes in, it will help open and release, which is why perhaps sometimes you end up, I say, leaking from your face. Like for no reason, the tears will just come. And that's the other beautiful part about sound healing, is that you don't need to know exactly what you're healing. You just need to trust that something is healing within you. And it's pure frequency. It's pure frequency. And so there's nothing, there's no additives to it. And when you're consuming something pure, that's going to heal you.
I'm trying to digest all of that right now because it was like so well said.
Thank you.
The purity of that, it meets you where you're at. Yeah, I'm trying to piece my words together because like that was, that kind of hit me really hard on that. I'm just, I'm like just It is. It's like, usually I have a question to follow up with and I'm like, shit, I don't know if I have a question to follow up with. The science of sound. Mm-hmm. You recently did a talk about it. Without getting too much into the research of it, can you just give myself and the audience a little bit of a brief overview on what the science has been saying about mm-hmm. the power of sound and frequency?
Yeah, I would love to. This is where my nerd geek self gets come out. So Albert Einstein said it best. He said, the future of medicine is frequency medicine. And then he went on to postulate about how we are all just energy. And if we want a specific reality, we must meet that frequency. And then there is no other choice for that reality to come into existence. And we are energetic beings. And so we have so much power. And like Albert Einstein was saying this stuff. Back before it was trendy. I love actually that sound healing is becoming trendy now because we need more of it. We need more facilitators. We need more of this medicine out in the world. But none of this is new. And even before Albert Einstein, I mean, we could go really deep into like ancient Egyptian times and how sound, there were sound chambers in the pyramids that helped heal the vibration, like bring the vibration of these pyramids to such a high frequency, which is why they're so sacred. There's just so much behind it. But also quantum physics talks so much about frequency and how sound waves penetrate through anything. And we're all made up of atoms. And so it's just, we're just a bunch of vibrating particles. And so of course, sound is going to be able to penetrate through that. It breaks through barriers, unlike any other medicine.
Do you find that people should prioritize sound when it comes to processing trauma over other more modalities? How should somebody be thinking about incorporating sound with any sort of current practice that they have if they're going through a season of trauma showing up? I have healing work I need to do. I am ready to grow and evolve into the higher version of myself. And sound sounds like, to me, like such a cool thing I can incorporate on top of my meditation, cold plunge, even with my therapist. Should people be swapping it out one for another? Should it be seen as a supplement? How would you go about recommending somebody start in a sound healing practice?
Yeah. So I think that it really kind of depends on your makeup, right? Mm-hmm. But I did give a protocol. I gave this talk yesterday and I was like, let me just save you the copay with your doctor and give you a protocol of how this healing can affect you and help shift some major things in your life. And it being to be on a frequent, consistent sound healing practice of twice a week for the first 3 months. And this will help regulate the system. So I think that there's so many other amazing modalities too, that I think all complement one another. But let's just say like somatic breathwork, for instance, that one is very active. It requires a lot of effort for the person participating in it. And it's actually pretty dysregulating for the nervous system. And so I think it's an amazing practice. I do it all the time too. But if you're already super dysregulated, that might not give you what you want, which is a calm nervous system to be able to relax and receive and surrender. There's amazing things that come from that. But with breath work, then coming into sound healing, you get activated and then you can calm down and neutralize. So I think that's really beautiful. Psychedelics, amazing. But again, like, not everybody's prepared for a psychedelic journey, or it's not safe for everybody to get into a psychedelic journey right away. A sound healing, like I mentioned earlier, your only job is to lay and receive. And that is our greatest work as a human. How much can we receive? How much love can you receive? Like, that's a great question to just ask yourself every day. How much love am I capable of receiving today? And so when you're receiving pure frequency, is how much can I allow myself to just lay here and know that I'm getting what I need? I don't need to be active in it. I don't need to do something. I don't need to earn this. I just get to be, and it comes to me. So you're not working your way. You're not efforting your way through healing with sound. You're allowing the healing to come to you. And I think
love that question.
I think that's a really beautiful way of starting your journey.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That how much love can I receive mm-hmm. when so many of us are focused on giving and giving mm-hmm. and trying to provide value? You see this a lot you see this a lot online with people who are starting businesses and this formulaic approach to, I just want to give value. I want to just always focus on just giving more than I'm receiving. And I think this opposite aspect of how much can I receive when it comes to not business, so to speak, but for just love, for the purity of community and relationships and all the things that we discussed today, is to talk about love
mm-hmm.
in that. Why do you think so many people have such a hard time receiving love?
Gosh, there's so many different variables to that, right? So I think it kind of boils down to feeling worthy.
Yeah.
I am worthy enough to receive this amount of love. Or I'm worthy enough to receive this amount of love. Or our worthiness is dependent on how much we think we are lovable. But if you know, without a shadow of a doubt, that you are worthy and that you are a sovereign being, and then by just you existing is enough, then there's no limitation on the amount that you are capable of receiving. That love is abundant. That if I get this amount of love from somebody, that doesn't mean somebody else gets to miss out. That there is more than enough for all of us.
So many of us make love conditional.
Oh,
we have to earn it and we have to get something in order to get it back
mm-hmm.
in return. And you had mentioned that I'm not worthy of receiving love is one of maybe the core wounding, right? That I don't deserve this.
Yeah.
Or to have this. If there's anybody out there right now listening to this and it resonates with what Sam is saying in regards to not feeling worthy of receiving mm-hmm. love, and you have been looking at love being conditional, Sam, I want to ask you, how does somebody reverse? How do they reverse going from contracts and stipulations and conditions in order for them to feel worthy and loved and go to just recognizing that they're okay just the way that they are, and love is everlasting, it's ever flowing, and it's more expansive than we can possibly know.
Mm-hmm. I think that first starts with how much you love yourself. Do you hold conditions on how much you love yourself? And if you're conditional with yourself, you're absolutely going to be conditional with others. And so it starts inside us as individuals. And that, for me, I'm still practicing this, right? Like, I think this will be a lifetime practice. Because there's moments that I like really crush it, and then moments that I'm not so much. But if I love myself so much, I really love myself so much. And it took me a long time to get to a place of being able to even say that out loud and confidently and undeniably. And from there, any other love is extra. And so then it's not as conditional. Like, if somebody doesn't like me, I'm okay with that. I love me. That doesn't mean I'm less lovable or I deserve less. Like, I still love me all the way. And so it doesn't matter if somebody else loves me or not. Yes, we want that because it feels good. That comes the ego. The ego gets in the way. The ego loves to be loved.
Yeah.
But when the ego can be set aside and say, like, my love for me is enough, then it doesn't matter if somebody else loves you or not.
I think one of the biggest struggles, as you were talking, I started thinking one of the biggest struggles for me in my lifetime was to allow myself to be worthy of love, and to also allow myself to recognize that I don't need to earn it.
Mm-hmm.
But I always thought I had to earn it for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I think hearing you say it's a lifelong practice, even when I've thought about how much work that I have had to do just to even get to this spot, and saying it's a lifelong practice for us to really ever truly love ourselves wholeheartedly and deeply. I'm like, well, I've done so much healing work. You know, nothing really sets me off in that. And then, you know, somebody makes a comment and immediately I take it personally. Right. It's just like a default programming. And I still have to remind myself to like work through that.
Yeah.
And like pause, mm-hmm. like remove myself of impulsivity
mm-hmm.
to do that. How do you suggest that people prevent themselves from going down the pit of despair, I like to call it, mm-hmm. when it comes to beating themselves up? When somebody may say something to them that could be taken as personal or that could make the individual judge themselves as unworthy of receiving love.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, we have to remember that everything is a projection. Every single thing is a projection. What I'm experiencing from you right now is a projection of what I'm putting out here. What I'm getting is a projection. It's really interesting. There's this book. It's called The World is a Mirror. I cannot remember the author's name. It starts with an N. I think it's Nada. It's a book about manifesting, but the first two chapters are really brilliant about really discussing how the world around us is just a projection of what we're making it. Every character in our story is just a projection. And how to play with that and how to manipulate, and not manipulate in a bad way, but manipulate how those interactions are. And so when we take things personal, it's because we think we did something wrong. But really, it's if we can remember like, I have no idea what this person's going through. I don't know if they didn't get a good night's sleep, if they're, you know, grieving something, if they have something personal going on in their life, if they're hungry, if I don't know. And whatever happened, whatever they projected onto me, I don't have to claim that as mine. I don't have to own that. And so we just have to remember that it's all a projection. We're all just projecting onto each other.
Yeah. Mm. I love that aspect of the world as a mirror.
Mm-hmm.
I really like that. It does make you kind of think about all the trials and tribulations that you go through in your life.
Yeah.
Where it all started. Like perception is reality.
Mm-hmm.
That whole entire thing.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah. Sam, we're coming to the end of the episode. I feel like we could talk for another hour.
At least.
At least. We'll have to save that for another time. I'd love to have you back on. As you know, for our guests, and before I even get into that, thank you for just your wisdom and your love, and just for coming on and just being your true authentic self and just sharing with us the power of sound, recognizing where self-love and healing starts. And if anybody is in Scottsdale, Arizona, please go to the portal, check out one of Sam's classes. It's absolutely phenomenal. And Sam, with that being said, and just giving you gratitude in this moment for just your time today, we ask every single guest on the show what their definition is of living their truth. Mm-hmm. So what does it mean to you, Sam, to live your truth now?
Mm. For me, it's being as present in the moment as possible, because that is the only truth that I have right now. And if I'm having a not so stellar day, I'm not going to pretend like I'm having a great day. People might say like, "Hey, how are you today?" I'm like, not my favorite day.
Yeah.
But it's okay. But I'm not going to pretend like it's something that it's not. And if I can show up that way, it gives other people to show up and have permission to be exactly who they are too. And so the truth is right now in this moment. So it's presence and awareness of the right now.
That's so good. What a way to end today.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Of course. I can't
wait for more of these discussions to unfold. And I hope that your listeners really get something juicy out of this, if not anything else, but to love themselves.
Those are amazing words I'll have to take with me today as well. And Sam, thank you again for your time, for your energy today. Much appreciated, my friend.
You're so welcome. Thank you.
And thanks to all of you for tuning into this week's episode of Live Your Truth Now. If you like what you heard, go ahead and give us a follow on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also watch other episodes of the Live Your Truth Now podcast on the Live Your Truth Media YouTube channel. This is Mike Liguori. I'll see you next week. Take care.